Hi, welcome to The Highway,
the unofficial fastest growing podcast in Southwest Missouri. We are off-site, right?
Yes.
Off-site, but on-site at a familiar place, I can't say, undisclosed location. But we have a guest here who I'm extremely excited to have. It's going to be good. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, you're not like a kid in the candy store at all.
I haven't actually just been all day like, come on. So,
grinning.
Really excited to have him here. I think it's just going to be great. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. I've known him for a while, but still, that's for later. So let's go ahead and introduce the Smee here real quick. Smee.
Walk this walk, you need no boots. I see myself each time I look at you. Everything that I need, mama's been so good to me. Now show me how you do it. First things first, it's a real body. Born pretty, she don't need no.
All right, Smee, what's up?
Oh, nothing. I'm just, that song is very bluesy. I'm enjoying that right now.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but it sounded good.
Yeah, Teddy Swims.
Here's my question. Are you as excited as I am right now?
I don't know that anybody can be as excited as you are.
I haven't been this excited since...
I'm looking forward to the conversation, that's
since
for
Prem,
sure.
Since Prem was... I was excited with him, too.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Let's just get to it.
I'm going to skip
my walk-up song, but I want to introduce our guest. Again, couldn't be more excited. The current Colonel of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, Mike Turner. Colonel, thanks for being here.
I was leaving these on so I could hear my walk-up song, so that's a good one. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, you picked it out. I definitely had nothing to do with that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. So my generation doesn't do walk-up songs.
Yeah, so... Because we sit you, you know, we kind of talked about this obviously prior to, and one of the things was like, hey, you know, walk up song. And today, I think it was today, I got your email. It's like, hey, my generation doesn't do walk up songs, so just pick one out. So, what I was actually going to do is like crickets and then a dad yelling, like, don't strike out, like at you, but I couldn't find the perfect sound, so I had to go with
Did you play baseball growing up?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, I did too. And like back in my day, you would go up and it would be quiet, and then you would get a hit. There wasn't all of these theatrics about walk-up song and, you know, launch angles and trying to hit a home run every time.
It's batting gloves. Now, was it a wood bat or did you guys have metal bats?
We actually had metal bats, but it was like one bat the whole team shared. Probably two bats. One was like a 34-ounce and then one was too big to pick up.
Yeah, it's like weighed like 12 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One or two helmets we all shared. You know,
so when one got lice, everybody got it. Nice.
Team building
building experience, of course. So yeah, I went with some Red Hot Chili Peppers. I think that's a crowd pleaser. You know, had to cut it out before the singing started. But yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. Let's see, man, about a month ago, I think right when we kind of, or he was named that you were going to be the next colonel, I had, I guess, called you, and then just went down there and said, hey, this is kind of what I'm doing. Are you interested in doing it? And without hesitation, you were like, yeah, of course. Which I'm not going to lie, I wasn't expecting that. So I appreciate you doing this. And I think it'll be meaningful. And I think I know a lot of our troops listen to it. So I think they're going to appreciate what you have to say.
I thank the world of you. You're one of our great instructors. Had the opportunity to meet the Smee on a trip.
which I was on vacation-ish.
Right, ish. And I respect your podcast and what you're trying to do, and I think it's a great way to communicate with the masses on the patrol.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, appreciate that. And I've never said where I worked on the podcast. I mean, now I think it's kind of inevitable, but let's kind of talk about your past, your history, because as you can imagine, when somebody gets named Colonel, or really any position, guys like myself, kind of lower ranking guys, you know, we get a lot of questions. What do you think is going to happen? What do you know about him? Is he a good guy? That type of stuff.
Yeah.
And I bet I've gotten, I don't know how many phone calls and text messages about this. So I thought, let's just let's just ask him and let him kind of explain it. So do you want to kind of tell us, like, maybe your background when you started with the patrol, maybe kind of your the path that you took to kind of lead you where you are right now?
Yeah, so I grew up in Kansas City, and I had no idea what I wanted to do, you know, when I got older.
Like KC proper?
Yeah, okay. in the city, and just north of the river, and had a lot of different jobs. You know, I was always involved in sports, baseball and football, so I would find jobs, you know, in the off season and in summer jobs, did a lot of different things. The last one kind of had the most impact on my path toward law enforcement. So I was working the night shift at a Quick Trip convenience store.
Oh, yeah.
Right? What Everybody a Kansas knows. City experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was working the night shift at Quick Trip, and I would work there all night, go to school during the day, started off at Maple Woods Community College, and the officers would come in, and they would get their free drinks, you know, and they would talk for a little while about, you know, how their ship was going, and they'd get a call, and then they'd turn their lights on, and then they'd leave. And I thought, man, just the service side of that, they're affecting people's lives. You know, here I am stuck in this joint all night, and I just wanted to be out there helping people. So, but I wanted to apply for the best agency that I could, and I applied at a lot of different places, and was lucky enough to be hired by the Highway Patrol.
Did you ever talk to those guys about getting into law enforcement, or like the officers
Absolutely.
That came in?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, like, it makes me wonder, like, in their minds, did they ever think, this guy who's working at Quick Trip mm-hmm. overnights, one day will be the colonel of the Highway Patrol? I mean, isn't that cool? Like, that's like a really neat story.
Yeah, how are, like, just every encounter kind of impacts the next generation of law enforcement.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that's just such a great point, because, I mean, I get it too. You know, hey, I'm interested in getting into law enforcement and stuff. And you know how it is. You hear that all the time, and sometimes you don't take it seriously. But, man, one of those guys may be sitting in your seat one day.
Yeah, it's funny. I maintain contact with some of them, right, and have throughout my career. That's one thing I like to do is, you know, I build relationships and try not to meet a stranger, and love what I do, love meeting new people, and it's kind of carried on throughout my career.
So when you got, hired your first go, your first application,
first time,
so you get hired, go through the academy, that experience is an interesting one. I think we could agree with that. So you get through the academy. Where did you go right out of the gate?
Right out of the gate, I went down to Camden County. It was Camden-Miller County zone. So as a kid, on the weekends, we had a small cabin that my parents have since retired to down at the Lake of the Ozarks. So I was familiar with the Lake of the Ozarks. There weren't any Kansas City Troop A spots open when I graduated, so I thought, you know, I'm going to be out somewhere in the country that I don't know, or, you know, maybe get to somewhere that I do know. So
okay.
I was able to get back close to where their place was. And, I did 5 years in Camden, Miller County, and was promoted right at 5 years to corporal, and went up to Callaway County. So a lot happened during that time. I met my wife, and we got married in 2001. Right when I became a corporal.
Oh, yeah, so a lot of moving parts. A
lot of changes. We bought our first home up in Fulton and got a little bit of the interstate life up there.
Sure.
And it was good.
So you go to Callaway. You're there for how long before you get then obviously promoted to sergeant?
So I was in Callaway for 4 years and had the opportunity to lateral back to the Lake of the Ozarks.
Oh, cool.
And as a corporal, and I did several more years as a corporal down at the lake, and then I was promoted to sergeant in 2007 in Morgan and Montauk County in Troop F.
Oh, okay. So you're zone sergeant there, which, I mean, it's just my personal opinion. I think zone sergeant is probably one of the best jobs on the patrol, because you're still on the road, you have that position of leadership, you're still able to intermingle with the guys, you know, directly, like road guys and stuff. So did you enjoy that zone sergeant kind of leadership?
I did. Yeah, that was my, I don't want to say my first real foray into leadership, because we'll talk about SWAT a little sure. bit too. So I was in that mix. But yeah, the, you know, being able to impact people's lives from the sergeant position was very important to me.
What do you think, like the biggest challenge was at that level? Because it's kind of, what do you call that?
In corporate world, we call it like middle management.
Yeah, middle management. Yeah. Yeah. Was there like a specific thing you remember about that?
Yeah. As a zone sergeant, I was in a single zone. So we were responsible for one zone. We had, coverage for, we didn't have somebody on 24 hours, but we were responsible for two counties, of course, for 24 hours. So in a single zone, it was tough getting people scheduled. We've always dealt with staffing shortages.
Sure.
And so, yeah, getting the schedule covered, making sure that the needs of my officers were met before mine, always very happy at home.
Sure.
With my wife, but she gets it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's important, too, is having that support, that structure, that foundation kind of at home. And, you know, again, obviously I have that, but I think, would you say that plays a really big part in your success, is having that 100%. Someone at home?
Yeah, she's service oriented too. She's been an emergency room nurse for almost 30 years, so, and working weird hours and taking care of people. So
that's like the perfect match.
Yeah,
it really is. Cops and nurses, kind of, you know, what we're known for, that or teachers. So yeah, it's perfect. And Smee and I talk about that a lot. They get our take on life, and, you know, understand that we see bad things, you know, they see bad things. So I think they have kind of a unique insight to what we do as well. So you're a zone sergeant there, and let's go ahead and kind of segue into the kind of the SWAT position when you, I guess, took that, or I obviously tried out, took that position, and kind of when you did take that position, you know, what did you get out of it? Because this was something you wanted to, you know, really talk about.
Yeah, that was a big crossroads in my career. So I was on the SWAT team, and I was one of, you know, the newer guys. I hadn't been on that long. And we went to a training, and several of the SWAT members had reached a point in their career where, you know, they were done with SWAT, and they had made the decision that it was time for them to step down and move on into other things. So we reported to a training, and like 80% of the team quit.
Oh, wow.
And there were a few of us that were still pretty new that didn't, you know, weren't at that position, and we wanted to continue being on the team. So we were forced to go offline for a period of time where the team wasn't able to respond. We just didn't have enough people, and we required some training. So we brought many new people onto the team, got the team up to where we needed to be operational. And it was a big part of my career, because I was a young corporal at the time. I didn't know a lot about tactical operations.
Sure.
But I knew that. So what I did is I reached out to others that I knew were a lot more knowledgeable about tactical operations. Because the one thing about cops is they're always willing to help you, right? And I knew I didn't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to be the smartest person in the room as a leader, but what you have to do is you have to realize that, and you have to lean on those that know more about something that you do.
Yeah.
Never been bashful about that. So I reached out to every agency in central Missouri that had a SWAT team in our area of operations, and I invited them to get together for a meeting. So we got together, we talked about what equipment we had, what equipment we needed. If your team had something that we knew we could use at some point in time, we built those relationships. So it was, you know, working together on a SWAT call. And that really helped develop me as a leader. And we leaned on other teams for training. So that meeting turned into what is now the Central Missouri Tactical Officers Association. And it's been in existence for over 20 years
now. Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
We've trained thousands of people every year. For about the last 20 years, they've been getting together. Each team that's able to come to training gets together in the once a year, and we move it around, and a lot of people get training out of it. So,
Yeah, that's really cool. Did, I mean, because like, how many of us, and again, I'll just use myself as an example, but we don't reach out for help or, you know, questions that we have. And maybe that's an adult thing. Maybe it is a, you know, that classic type A, I don't want to ask, or, you know, maybe it's embarrassing or whatever. But that's, I think that's really mature, and I think it shows you as a leader that you're willing to do that. And when you said that, I immediately jotted down this little note. So there's a, like, General Patton, one of his quotes is, know what you don't know and know what you know.
Yeah.
And so when you said that, that's the first thing I thought of, you realizing, even at a young age, that you needed help, right? I think that, again, kind of builds into and shows your kind of outlook on leadership. So do you think that kind of played into your relationship building over your career?
Because, I mean,
you're still doing that, obviously.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. You know, I came into that position, and like I said, I didn't know what I didn't know, and really relied heavily on those around me. You know, as a team leader, you're ultimately responsible for the success and the failure of your team, and not just that, but the lives of the people on your team. And if my decisions are going to affect their lives, you know, I want to make sure that I'm making the best decisions. And at that point in time, I didn't feel like I had enough training to do that. So I reached out to people in the SWAT world around the Central Missouri area and in the FBI and other entities. And you just got to be willing to ask, and they will bring that training to you and make you better.
So. Yeah, man, I love that. How was it received? I mean, did they were like, oh, this is great, this guy. I mean, you know, the patrols looked up pretty well around the state. People look at kind of put us elevated a little bit. So I assume that they were really eager to get in and help and really teach too. Like, was it well received?
It was well received. I never heard no from anybody. You know, there's a lot of quality people in law enforcement across this state. You know, I didn't get here on my own. I'm not bashful about that at all. There's a lot of people who I've met along the way that helped me as a person and as a leader. They helped me develop, and I'm here because of them.
Yeah, man, that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, you're just like feeding into what I was picturing. I'm like, man, this is, I know this is kind of how, you know, he think, or I think this is how he thinks and stuff. And this is, it's just really neat for me to hear as, I mean, you know, not at this very moment, but as really one of your employees, that this is your outlook on leadership and your style. And that's just really neat because, you know, I guess before I transferred up here, I mean, I don't think we had, if we did, it was probably in passing or something. And so I've got to know you a little bit. And one thing I always say about you is you're always willing to listen. And it's me and I've talked about this too. And you always ask questions. And when you ask a question, I truly feel like you're listening to my response. Where, you know, sometimes I feel like some people are just asking me a question just to make conversation or something.
Right.
So, I want you to know that that does, I can see that too as an employee. And I can tell you also that other people see that and appreciate that. So, as much as I like to give SWAT guys a hard time, I've got to give you some credit there. That's pretty neat for a young guy to recognize that and move forward.
So one thing that kind of drives SWAT people crazy is there's an old saying, you have non-tactical people making tactical decisions. So a lot of times in leadership, they think they know what's best for the team, and they will make a decision on what the team's going to do or not do. And, you know, that could put somebody in a really bad spot.
Yeah.
So I try to not do that.
Yeah. No, that's great. So you're at the, you're on SWAT. I mean, obviously, I assume you stay on that as a zone sergeant.
How long do you do that for?
I did that until I got promoted to lieutenant, which was in 2011.
Okay. And that was Troop F?
Right, in Troop F.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go to lieutenant spot. How does that, I mean, how do you navigate the now administration world at that point?
You know, it's a little tough because, you know, you're now in a command role over people that you've come up with, right? And in the troop that you started and you've worked your way up through. So, but at the end of the day, again, it's about relationships. I think mm-hmm. people are willing to eat a crap sandwich from somebody that they know would be right there next to them, eating it with them.
Sure.
And I would.
Man, that's I love that quote. Eat a crab. Yeah.
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 So how was that transition for you, though, personally, like going from being peers with these individuals to now you're, you know, kind of in charge in the, you know, the superior officer in the situation?
I think if you keep the same mindset that you have always had and you don't change who you are, it's okay, you know. So the people that I worked with are still the people that I would call and ask for opinions on before we as a troop staff would make a change, you know. I don't feel like it feel changed like it. Me. If you reached out to the people that I worked with, you know, was Mike any different as a lieutenant, captain, major, colonel,
yeah,
than I was, you know, as their coworker? You know, me as a person, probably not. There's certain things I can't share. And
right.
But, you know, hopefully it hasn't changed me.
Yeah, and I think that's, I have some insight or what I think is, you know, read a lot of leadership books and stuff. And that's kind of the main thing is, yeah, your role may change as far as your responsibilities. But, you know, you as a person, if that's truly, you know, you as a if you are a leader, then you don't personally change. It's just your role and the part that you play in, you know, the agency, the the agency. So I like to hear that, too. That's really cool. Because I met you as a captain. I think you just took over Troop F-ish when I transferred here. Does that kind of sound right, the timeline?
When did you transfer?
2018.
So I took over F in 15.
Oh,
I came on the colonel staff in 19. So I was just about at the end of my time at Troop F.
Okay, so maybe I'm thinking when you got promoted to major then. That's probably what I'm...
Obviously, I didn't make an impact.
No, so you made an impact. And I have this on my notes, so I'm going to talk about this real quick before we move on to a more serious question. So when you did get promoted to major, you ended up kind of coming down here to the gym a little bit more. And one of my favorite stories about you, is it all right if I tell it?
Yeah.
So it was Adam Hitt and I. We worked out kind of every day together, and you came in and you're like, "Hey, let's start lifting," and we did. And my thought was, again, not knowing you, I really don't want to lift with. You know what I mean? I'm going to have to act a certain way and all this stuff. And
because you saw how much I lifted, and you were intimidated.
Yeah.
It was not the rank; it was the weight.
Once I saw you in a cutoff, and I realized that I was the smallest guy in the room, I immediately wanted to leave.
I get that a lot.
But it was really refreshing and neat because in the gym, you're just you. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't, I think at the time, I was just a trooper, you know, so it wasn't major trooper or major corporal, whatever I was. And I remember we were doing chest one day, and we were doing bench press, and we were doing three sets of 12. And, you had on some heavy weight. Like, you wouldn't slack,
right?
You know, and to the point I'm like, I don't know, man, maybe you shouldn't be throwing this much weight on, but you would do it. And my favorite part of it is I think you lay down and you get like 8 reps and you were hurting, and you get up, you're like, oh, and I was like, how many reps was that? And you immediately, I think, knew. You're like, oh, and you laid back down and cranked out 4 more reps. Like, that was like a really big thing for me, you know, because a lot of guys, even if it wasn't a work relationship, it was like, yeah, I'm done. And I think you saw that, you know, Adam and I had done 12, and you were not going to not do 12.
Yeah.
You know, so that was one of my stories. I'm like, man, this guy's a legitimate guy. You know, this is pretty cool. So, so I remember that, and I appreciate you just being one of the guys in the gym, because I was not looking forward to that, if we're just being honest. But it worked out great. You were major over FOB for...
Just watch him do the math.
You want me to help him?
Can you take your boots off so I can count your toes, too? Yeah, you know what? How about this? How long were you major of FOB?
Yeah, so I came on the colonel's staff in 2019. I went to Support Services Bureau.
That's right.
Did 3 years in support services, and then when Greg Smith, Major Smith, retired... I was able to take his spot in FOB, and I did 3 more there, just under 3, before being promoted to colonel.
I mean, I can't imagine being the major of FOB, because I feel like there's got to be just a million moving parts.
That feels like a really big division, like vision. That's like all of the troops, right?
Yeah.
Like all the road officers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be challenging.
It's all of the troops, all 9 troops, aircraft division, water patrol division.
It's a lot.
Crash team, SWAT teams. aircraft. I mean, every
so basically anything other than the training
division.
Yeah, like
division. What's
left? Yeah. I guess in governor's security, I mean, everything else is kind of a smaller role, I guess. And I'm not trying to downplay anything, but that's a huge role.
It's a big responsibility, for sure.
Yeah. What was your most challenging thing being in that position? Because that's got to be a lot of pressure, or I would feel like it's a lot of pressure.
Just the tempo, you know, having to multitask and balance things and keep the colonel informed on everything that's going on in the agency. And, you know, just the safety of our people, man.
Yeah.
That's what keeps you up at night, you know, because, you know, you're at home in bed and they're out, you know, in the cold or, you know, working by themselves. And, you know, you'd get a call that one of them would be hurt and you're like, man.
Yeah.
You know, if I'd have been there, would that have happened, you know, and just things like that.
Yeah. Yes. Kind of being in the position I'm in now, I mean, not that pressure, but I talked to Smee about that too. When I see a guy that I've trained, one was in a shooting, and I was just like, I almost felt helpless. Does that kind of, I mean,
oh yeah,
I guess explain that a little bit, like, God, well, what if I could have stopped it, maybe I could have helped, or, you know, whatever it was. So I can't imagine, and that's just a small group of guys. So I can't imagine the entire agency that you feel, I don't want to say, again, maybe not helpless, but you could have been there.
Or, yeah. You feel responsible like for. Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe these are your brothers and sisters, man. And, you know, the older I get and the younger the people that come on are, they become kind of like your kids, right?
Yeah.
So the other day we had an incident where Justin Hedrick intervened in a wrong way driver.
Yeah.
And, man, I was so proud of him. That one of the first things I did, you know, when, like, your kid scores a touchdown on the football field, you want to show everybody, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt that. And, his dad was a former SWAT officer and Troop C, friend of mine, Todd. So, I mean, I just had to call him. I'm like, hey, I'm a dad. I know you're a dad. I'm proud of your kid, my kid. Right? So,
I love that you say that, because we just saw the video was this weekend, maybe came out. And so Justin came through since I've been here. And I felt the same. I mean, my heart was fluttering. I was so excited for him. And what a stud, by the way. You know what I mean? Because he listens too, but you're a stud, dude. Like, I saw that video and thought, there's no hesitation. I mean, he knew exactly what he was going to do, and the mindset of a young guy, because he's probably got under 5 years. He's got to be under five. And to know that that's the way our people are performing, I mean, what a proud thing.
Yeah.
You know, and gosh, what a, again, just a stud. I was so proud of him, still am, and I can tell that you are too.
You know, the night before we had a incident down in Southwest Missouri where a wrong-way driver killed three people, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just hard to say what could have happened.
Sure.
You know, if he wouldn't have been there and impacted that situation. So he definitely saved lives.
Oh, man. Just, and, you know, again, I'm a drunk guy, so, you know, I understand that there was some possible impairment involved there too. And, I mean, just, again, you see these, when I say kids, I don't mean it in a bad way, but kind of like you said, they're like your kids that are out there and now doing things, and seeing them making these decisions, like, I'm so excited for his future with this organization. You know, he's going to be, and not just him, there's so many guys out there that are going to do big things, and I don't think the agency could be in better hands than some of these guys that are coming up.
Yeah, both he and Gadke were involved in a situation last year in Troop C, and I told them both at that time, I don't know that I could be any prouder of you, and so, and then this happens, right? So
yeah, well, they just got the Heroes Award, right, at the inauguration, I think, I don't know if the official title, but Trey's such a good kid, and I mean, again, they're just, it's just so neat to watch these guys work and know that they're, you know, they're fighting crime and they're doing it for the right reasons, and they're, you know, just out there getting it every night. And again, it's proud is all I can say.
That's what energizes me, man, because this agency is full of them, you know. I'm confident that when they get their moment to affect somebody's lives, they're going to do it, you know. And
yeah, do it and do it well.
Yeah, you know? I'm not saying just in that, you know, that type of situation, you know, arresting drunks, you know, going out and, you know, serving the public day in and day out. One of the problems with what we do is you don't always see the net result of your,
right,
you know, your actions and your efforts as a law enforcement officer. So
yeah, those, bright future, I think. You know, that's how I feel about it. It's just a really bright future. And I'm glad that you're talking about this stuff, because I'm so proud of those guys. And we talk, you know, quite a bit on social media and text and stuff, and they're loving it. You know, it's the greatest job on the face of the planet. And, you know, those guys were meant to do this and born to do this. So.
Yeah, so we expedited the investigative process with DDCC and PSD, because I wanted to get that out there. I really want to, you know, go to the highest mountain and show the public.
Yeah.
What, you know, your Missouri State Troopers are out doing day in and day out.
Yeah, and we looked at, because I'm, you know, we get into social media quite a bit, and we reposted it, and just the feedback from everybody is nothing but positive things from the public. Like, man, great trooper, great decision, great this. And how many times on social media do you see a lot of negative stuff? And I haven't seen one negative thing. And here's, if you say something negative, you're wrong. I'm going to say that too.
Well, I just think that sometimes, like, there's too much focus on negative. So I think, especially, like, in your level of leadership and that type of knowing that they're supported and that they are encouraged to be proactive, I think goes just super far. Because you're right. Then, without some of that, then they're probably never going to receive any kind of feedback on their actions, especially from the public, right? They don't really know what's going on versus know how to evaluate what's happening.
Yeah. And I think the citizens of Missouri see that, and I think it makes them proud, you know, that these are the guys that are our troopers, you know, and that's who we are, you know, we're their troopers. And
the ladies, not just the guys.
Yes, sorry. Mm-hmm. When I say guys, I mean all-encompassing. Yeah, I always try to say guys and gals, but mm-hmm. I mean everybody. We just got such a rock star group, and, you know, I think it's going to continue that way for a long time. And I made a joke with Greg Prim today that we're talking about Hedrick and Gadke and guys like that of that caliber, that you know, one of these days Greg and I are going to be sitting in our wheelchairs eating oatmeal, and they're going to be running this place, and it's going to make us just feel really good that they're the ones, you know, running this. And again, not just these two, but that's who we're talking about. And I love that the future's bright.
Yeah, it is bright.
So kind of and I'll get to your position of colonel here in just a second, but I think this is a pretty good time to talk about social media. This is kind of one of the questions I had brought up, because social media in law enforcement, I feel like, sometimes has a, I don't know, we shy away from it. So that's number six down there. Sometimes we shy away from it a little bit. You know, what's kind of your thoughts on using social media to get the information out, like what Justin did, and then maybe even like the recruiting side of things? Is there any, I guess, just what's your kind of thoughts on the use of social media?
Yeah, so if we are going to continue to be the premier law enforcement agency in the state, which I believe we are, mm-hmm. we really have to prioritize, you know, those advances in technology and scheduling and policy and all of those things to make sure that, you know, we are at the top of our game. And social media is part of that. You know, the tactics we use to hire people, you know, almost 30 years ago when I came on, the world's changed.
Yeah.
They don't work anymore. And we have to embrace that, and we have to be willing to change, and I think we are.
Yeah, because I think social media is one of those things that, love it or hate it, it's here to stay. Yeah. And so really all you can do at this point is control your narrative and control how you're perceived and kind of put your own front out there versus letting other people do it for you, because again, we've seen the negative presence of social media. And so I think it's just, you have to control that narrative, and you have to say, this is how we want to be represented in this space, because it's going to happen one way or the other, so you might as well have a hand in it, if you will,
and use it positively too. You know, I wasn't a big social media guy. In fact, I didn't have anything for about, what, probably close to 10 years there for a while. Well, then I saw the benefit in it. It's a free platform where with a click of a button, you can reach millions of people. And I'm thinking, you know, because there's always budget constraints, you know, I get it. So my thought is, man, we got to use this free platform. It doesn't cost us a dime. You know, there's certain things that do, but overwhelmingly it's free. And that's the, you know, on the recruiting side of it. So you look at different types of social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, all that stuff. But there's, you know, the people that were wanting to recruit, you look at, man, they're on Instagram, you know, they're on TikTok, they're on all these platforms. And anyway, so yeah, I just kind of wanted your thought on that. And because I feel like as law enforcement, as an agency, sometimes we would shy away from those types of things, but like Smee said, they're here.
Yeah, those ads, you know, on the commercial side, when you're advertising, those aren't free.
Right,
those are expensive. Yeah. In our recruiting budget, I want to say it's like $40,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
So we're doing what we can to try to be our own cheerleaders and work to get a bigger recruiting budget so we can do more of those things. But
yeah.
The key, what I'm being told, is, you know, those short clips. Mm-hmm. We've got a great product, and I think there's a lot of service-minded people that are wanting to get into law enforcement, right? We just have to show them what the patrol can do for them. We've got so many options on the patrol that they could progress into that we just have to let them know.
Yeah, that's what blew me away, because I worked at a city and a county before coming here. And when I come here, I'm like, oh my gosh, you'll pay me to fly a plane as a trooper? I never knew that. Or my current role, you'll pay me to teach people how to, you know, find and apprehend impaired drivers? I mean, I had no idea.
Yeah, we'll teach you to fly a plane, give you all your ratings, and
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you will pay me to learn how to fly and then pay me to fly it.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just really cool. In water division, there's so many different things that the patrol has, DDCC.
Water division. Have you seen what our divers are capable of? It's amazing.
So, probably not to the full extent that I should, but I see some of the water training here. I don't want any part of it because I'm like, I don't want to dive in that water.
You sink like a rock anyway.
Yeah, so. And I don't swim very well, so I wasn't going to say that, but thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah. But those guys, those guys are great.
They are.
Swiftwater rescue training, have you seen that?
I have, yeah.
I mean, you got to be, I guess I'll use the word brave. You've got to be very brave to jump in some of that stuff.
Yeah, they're skilled. I mean, they don't just know that. We've got very skilled trainers, and they perfect their craft, and they're amazing to watch. I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, and they do a heck of a job too.
Yeah, and I think that just from your comment, if you didn't know some of these things, even getting into the patrol, then the general public has no idea, especially since the majority of our state is very rural. So their representation or their exposure to law enforcement is your deputy sheriffs and your city cops. Like, they don't really see a lot of those things in where they're at. So just being able to see the opportunities and being exposed to those options is
for sure
is very key in recruitment, I would say, and interest in the field.
Very excited about our Accelerated Academy program. I know you've taught several of those now. We're going to have another one coming up in January. You know, where prior law enforcement, whether it's in Missouri, out of Missouri, in the military, you know, you have an opportunity to go to through a condensed academy class. Mm-hmm. We're going to send you where you want to go, and you get to choose your assignment. So,
and that kind of came out when you were major of FOB, right?
We
had kind of shifted to, hey, we'll tell you where you want, or tell you where you're going. I think it's kind of when they get hired now, right?
Before they get their conditional offer, we will let them know where they're going to be assigned. And so what I tell people is, when you're in the academy, there's a certain amount of stress, right?
Sure.
So some of that stress is by design, and it's good. We don't want the first time someone experiences stress to be in a, you know, on the side of the road on a traffic stop or in a crash or during a critical incident. We want them to experience it in a controlled environment here at the academy. But other stressors, such as, where am I going to be assigned?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to be able to find a place to live during a time where the housing market's very difficult? Is my spouse going to find a job?
Yeah.
Where are my kids going to go to school?
Yeah.
Those are all things that are going through their mind when they're sitting in the academy, you know, because in the past they wouldn't know their assignment until the second or the third trimester, effectively giving them maybe a month or two to find somewhere to live,
sure,
to find a job for their spouse, right? So we're trying to eliminate some of that stress to keep them in the academy.
Yeah, I think that shows a level of, again, caring for folks and understanding that, or understanding the human side of, you know, when I was in the academy, she was by herself. You know, a lot of these kids, these guys have families, kids at home, and you're right, changing schools. And to know that I don't have to change a school or move my kid anymore, or my wife doesn't have to leave her job, that's huge. And
or if you do, you have more time to plan
sure.
for it, right? Like the 6 month period. Because I think that when you were through the academy, it was still like the last month that you found out your assignment. And so you had like 90 days maybe at most to to relocate. But I think that even if you do have to go through those transitions, that you have more time to plan for all those moving pieces on the home side of things is, again, one of those unnecessary stressors that doesn't that doesn't directly relate to how well you're going to do in the academy.
Yeah, just anecdotally, you know, I'll come over at lunchtime when I have time, and I'll sit with the recruits and talk to them. And one of the things that I ask them is, hey, did it help knowing where you're going to go before you showed up at the academy? And every one of them is like, yeah, that really sealed the deal for me and made it a lot less stressful on the home life. So.
Yeah, it's I had that conversation with them today. They're, you know, looking at houses and, you know, where do I go and that type of thing. And, you know, and you probably remember too, the first time I bought a house, that was stressful. So then I'm learning a new job and trying to buy a house, and I think we had just gotten married. You know, there were so many different things, but I think that's a great idea to give them, hey, this is where you're going right off the bat. And I think you talked about the accelerated. I think we've gotten a lot of good officers who maybe wouldn't have come through before for various reasons through that accelerated program, and I think a lot of them are doing a really bang-up job. Two classes ago, or maybe the last accelerated, we had a husband and a wife come through.
Right.
I mean, that was cool.
Yeah.
It really was. Now, you send me through the academy with Smee, we're probably not ending married, but, you know, they just did a great, you know, they did a really good job. And, you know, she was prior law enforcement, he was Border Patrol, and what an asset, right? They came in, they kicked the hind end, and now they're out working the road, and it's just a great I thought it was really neat.
They went down to Troop G.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a great story. And but that's another example of not, you know, of it's not necessarily my idea. My assistant in FOB when we came up with this, Dieter Borgmeier, her husband's a trooper, right?
Yeah.
So how about talking to the wives of the troopers and finding out, you know, what's their perspective on things and what does it feel like, you know, when he was in the academy to you? What are things we can do to maybe help that situation? So you just got to be willing to listen.
Yeah, that's, and I think it circles back to what we were talking about, having that foundation at home. You know, if you can keep her happy and she feels heard, that, you know, the agency is also thinking about them as a family, I think that just makes the situation better, and probably the you know, future trooper to feel that much more supported by that.
But every decision, as you know, has second, third, fourth order consequences, right?
Sure.
There's a backside to that. So when we assign to people at the second or the third trimester, most of the people that were going to leave the academy had already left by then,
mm-hmm.
right? So you know what your priority openings are, and then you can adjust based on where you need to send people.
Yeah.
So if you have certain people go into places and then they leave early on in the academy, that happens to be a priority spot, you know, there's a chance that they could remain short for a while if, you know, we give them one shot while they're in the academy to backfill those vacancies that were created by people that quit.
Yeah.
So that helps a little bit, but
yeah,
a spot could be open for a while if, you know, if someone quits early on.
Yeah, that's something I didn't really think about. Yeah. Maybe you're going to, well, let's use Cole County here, and, you know, Cole County thinks they're getting a guy. Next thing you know, 3 weeks in, the recruit decides it's not for them. Then, you know, Cole County's not getting a guy.
Right. Or a gal.
Or a gal, dadgummit. Yeah.
Dang it.
Or a gal.
Is that happy? Like, is that kind of causing issues, or are you seeing that kind of be a problem consistently, or?
You know, I think the troop commanders get it. I think the good outweighs the bad, and the benefit of telling people where they're going to go and the result of maybe having more people remain in the academy or being a recruiting incentive, I think that outweighs the negative of those quitting and being open. So,
yeah, I would agree. Being in the position that I'm in, I get to hear the backside of it, and I absolutely agree that they're much happier coming in with less stressors.
And that opens up a bigger conversation, you know, with regard to residency. So the changes we've made with residency allow people to live, you know, in a certain place, and as long as they're 20 road miles from their zone line, they're not going to have to move. And that's going to help with recruiting. It's going to help with promotability, with, you know, promotions.
Yeah.
Some people willing to take promotions and perhaps not having to move. You know, because if you live here in Cole County and you could literally go to, you know, every touching county and work.
Yeah, and that, again, I hear a lot of stuff from the road, and that was a big thing. It's, oh, wow, I can promote into any of these locations now to, you know, when you came on and I came on, that just wasn't, you right. had to actually move to that county.
You did.
And it may be 15 miles, maybe 20 miles, you know, so, you know, you'd hear a lot of guys, oh, I can't believe I got to move 7 miles, but
right.
I think it's just another great idea, and I think it's another great example of the agency recognizing that and moving forward.
For sure.
And making adjustments. So, all right, going back to your career path, got off track just a little bit. So you're a major of FOB, all of a sudden you're colonel.
Right.
I mean, how does that, like, it's got to be a surreal feeling, right? I mean, I would picture, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm the colonel now.
That's exactly how it is. Yeah, you go, you sit in the office that you at first were afraid to go into, and then, you know, you get promoted, and then you sit at the table, and you've got a voice, and then, you know, fast forward, and then you're at the helm. So, but like I said, I've had a lot of help along the way.
Yeah.
I didn't get here by myself, and I've had, you know, a lot of people that have mentored me, and I've paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, yeah, again, I just pictured, oh, you're the colonel. Well, okay, I don't know what to do now. I, you know, because that's an area that, you know, very few people ever sit in your spot. And it's just got to be a real emotional, humbling experience.
It's a tremendous honor. You know, I think about the men and women on this organization and, you know, how important they are to me and not wanting to let them down. And provide them the resources and the support that they need. That means everything to me,
yeah.
You know. And we've got tremendous support, starting at the governor's office with mm-hmm. Mike Kehoe. I've had the opportunity to travel with him around the state when I was in FOB, you know, different events. And his support is real. You
yeah.
know, I've made a life out of reading people, and his support is real. And he's absolutely legit. And to have a DPS director like Mark James come in with a long history of mm-hmm. And experience in law enforcement, it just, it's great for the agency. It's just a really good time.
Yeah, and I saw the director James had commented on that video of Trooper Hedrick, and it was such a cool comment of, yeah, you know, we're here to stop, you know, crime, you know, not a quote, but we're here to stop crime, and, you know, the time of criminals allowing to go or do what they will is over. And I was like, man, this is our DPS director. Oh, wow, this is cool. And that's, you know, that, like you said, from the governor down.
Yeah, because I think that just even as a civilian, like, I don't know these individuals necessarily or their ranks or their titles, but I could see how from a statewide position or a statewide leadership role, you know, just being that vocal and that, you know, kind of upfront on a social media platform is refreshing, probably.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Very refreshing.
No.
Yeah. So I think I know the answer to this, but when you applied here, did you ever think, man, one day I'm going to be the colonel?
So that's that's kind of a difficult question, right?
Yeah.
So I'll answer it this way. When I first came on, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, we all have growth needs.
Sure.
Right. So you come on as a trooper and you want to do the best job as a trooper. And I was always competitive and in athletics and stuff. So, you know, you want to do good. You want to work hard. You want to move up. So, yeah, I wanted to be a corporal. Then you become a corporal and you see things that, you know, maybe change you can affect
mm-hmm.
at the zone sergeant level. So you work hard and then you become a zone sergeant. And then you see the effect of your decisions and on the people that you supervise, and you put people first, and you know, then you see what can happen at the lieutenant level, right? So you mm-hmm. work hard, you study, you go through the assessment center. I was lucky enough to be, I had to move, but I was lucky enough to be promoted in the troop that I came up in, and I was always a servant leader. So you get to that lieutenant spot, and it kind of feels a little bit like a corporal again. So you're a manager, right? But you're still answering to the captain.
Sure.
As a corporal, you're answering to the sergeant. And you're thinking, okay, if I'm the troop captain, you can really affect the troop. You know,
yeah.
We're talking 150 people plus, you know, all the additional people you have on the civilian side. And so I've never doubted myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a tremendous honor for sure.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good way to look at it. Just, yeah, the next challenge and how can I, yeah, affect the agency in a positive way.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at that.
But I've always just been me. I think yeah. that's the key is, you know, I'm real. I don't care what your rank is or what you can do for me.
Yep.
You know, I'll treat the person that's sweeping our floors the same as, you know, the DPS director when he comes in.
So. Yeah. Yeah, that's really neat. All right. Here's a big question for you. So as a newly appointed colonel, what was the official date? February 5th?
February 1st.
First, okay.
Is when, when I took over. I was confirmed shortly before that.
Okay, so February 1st. But as a newly appointed colonel, what's your vision for the Highway Patrol moving forward from here?
Yeah, so I kind of laid out four things in an email I sent right off the bat. The first is service and protection, right? That's who we are. That's the foundation of the Highway Patrol. The second is recruiting and retention, not just recruiting, but retaining our quality employees. The third is communication. And the fourth is, in no particular order, is employee safety and wellness.
Yeah, I remember that email when it came out, because once again, my phone's blown up. Have you seen this email? And I thought you just laid it out. And again, I'm not here to brown nose. I would say it, right? But it was great, and people felt inspired, and communication is a big thing, which kind of, you know, my next question kind of leads into that. But I thought that was just great to know, hey, this is what you want to do, and now we just take the pathway to get there, right?
Let's go.
And then you sign it with let's go. I told my buddies, again, who are troopers in other states, I'm like, I just got an email, not me personally, but we all just got an email from the colonel, and the sign-off was let's go, all caps with a couple exclamations, I think. They're like, no pictures or it didn't happen, so I screen cap little let go. They're like, dang, man, that's pretty cool. So
that's a sign-off.
Yeah, I love that communication, that direct communication. So again, here's kind of a segue into this next question here. So, in a large agency, do you think there is a disconnect between the road trooper and upper level administration? And if there is, like, how do we fix that or change that or take that in a different direction?
So it depends on your definition of disconnect. So just inherently by the jobs, you become separated from what the troopers, corporals, and sergeants do, regardless if they're in road enforcement or what their function is on the patrol or investigations side, just because you don't do it every day, right? So how do you combat that? I mean, the answer to your question is yes, right? But what can we do about it? And the only way I know how to fix that is to just get out, right? Now, the job requires you to be in your seat in this position a lot, because there's just a lot of things that don't happen if you're not there to sign them or, you know, to move different things forward. But you got to get out. You got to see people. You got to talk to people and, you know, learn what they do, learn what their struggles are.
Yeah.
That's what's important to me.
Yeah, and I'm going to use the example of you last week. I'm doing field sobriety in the gym, and next thing I know, you pop up, and we kind of chit-chat a little bit, and then I leave and come back, and you're mingled in with the groups of recruits and talking about field sobriety, and I just thought that was a great way to connect and see these guys and gals through their training from academy on, and that's something they remember. And we had a conversation about that, and that was just really neat of you to do that. And I've seen pictures of you sitting with the recruits, which is really, really neat of you to do that. So I'm glad that, you know, we're taking those steps and being with those folks that are, you know, really doing the hard frontline work.
So I just had knee surgery a couple of weeks ago, and I don't recall doing the walk and turn, having to stand for so long, you know, heel to toe and not move. So it was just killing me. I'm like, I can't step off this line, you know, but my knee could fall off any moment right here.
Yeah. So. I just picture you sitting there, next thing you're on the ground, your knees like over there out, on the free throw line.
Yeah, I'd have got back up though.
Yeah. Actually, I have no doubt you would. Which that was the best part of my, hey, what's going on? He's like, oh, I just got cleared to go go to the gym after my knee surgery. I'm going to go hit legs. And I'm like, He's got to be joking. Yeah. No, he goes down to the gym and hits legs, which
They're pretty weak.
I'm going to have to go video that so I've got proof of, then I'll send that out.
Yeah.
He's only squatting 135. I'll leave out your knee surgery, though.
We'll just leave out the weight.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, we'll spritz you with some water, get you real sweaty.
Yeah, I think that approach is such a healthy approach because you're never going to be able to get rid of that disconnect because the roles are just, and the expectations of the roles are just so different. But yeah. That, you know, we've talked about it on previous podcasts with other leaders in law enforcement, that concept of, being where the work actually happens. And
right.
So just being aware of the disconnect and being aware that the roles require different things and you have to proactively try to, bridge that gap, right?
Yeah.
And stay up to term and stay in the know with what's mm-hmm. going on.
That, you hit on it. That's the key. You bridge that gap by bringing people in that know more about you on a topic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to be at the table and I'm going to be talking about DWI enforcement mm-hmm. or SFSTs or, you know, marijuana, you know, anything to do with that, I'm going to reach out to you, right? You're the subject matter expert and that stuff. I'm not going to pretend to be. I need to have that person who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Helping guide this agency, directing me on what to do. You know, if it's interdiction, it's going to be a Greg Prim
yeah.
or a Steven Johnson
yeah.
or, you know, those guys. If, you know, if it's SWAT, it's going to be certain people.
Mm-hmm.
I've got no problem with admitting that I need to learn about something and listening to those people that are.
Yeah, yeah. I, again, love that. You're saying things that I'm like, gosh, I love what you're saying. That's awesome. I know you're a busy guy.
Oh, I'm good.
You got time for two more quick questions, or I think they're going to be quick. Who knows? Okay, so we do have a lot of folks that are not troopers that listen to the podcast. So other agencies, a couple different countries, cops in other countries listen to this too. So my question is, if there's folks out there that are listening to this episode right now, why would they choose to come to the Missouri State Highway Patrol?
I could be here all night. So, like I said earlier, it starts at the top. You've
yeah.
got a governor that completely supports law enforcement. He rolled out his Safer Missouri plan.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing he did after being inaugurated is went up to his office and signed several executive orders trying to create a safer Missouri.
Yeah.
You've got a DPS director who's been in law enforcement for a really long time at the federal level, at the state level, and he gets it, right? You've got a staff, a colonel and the staff that support you, and it's so many opportunities within this agency. You know, if you want to be a road officer, that's absolutely fine. You
yeah.
can, you can certainly do that if you want to be an investigator, a diver, a pilot, a governor's security officer. Work
gaming,
on the water.
Gaming too, yeah.
There's a bomb squad. There's just so many opportunities that you have on this agency for development, for training, for growth. And bottom line is we want you. We need you.
Yeah, yeah. And I would echo that because I didn't know that stuff. And, I'm extremely happy that I came to the patrol. I don't regret a single second. I love the agencies that I worked at. I had an absolutely awesome time at those agencies, but I'm proud. One of my proudest moments, and we always get a crap for our hats, right? I get
right.
that. But I do wear my hat a lot because I feel like I've earned it. And I think when you become a trooper, you earn that right, if you will, to be called a Missouri State Trooper. And I think that's something that you can't almost put into words unless you experience it. So yeah, I'll echo what you said. And I'm really happy I came to this agency. I'm really happy they hired me. Colonel Replogle, thanks for hiring me. So I'll echo that. I just think it's a great decision and there's a lot of opportunities here.
For sure.
Okay, last question. Like I said, I know you got a lot going on. So we do have a lot of Missouri troopers who listen to this podcast, and I'm going to take a wild guess and say there's going to be a lot more listen to this specific episode. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. So is there anything that you want to say directly to the guys and gals on the front lines right now, right there on the road, who are probably going to be listening to this while they're working. Any message you have or anything you want to say directly to them?
Just how appreciated they are, regardless of their position, whether they're a civilian, mm-hmm. whether they're a member of this organization. It takes all of us working together to accomplish our mission. And I'm going to be right next to you every step of the way, and very thankful.
I appreciate that. Smee, anything you want to...
No.
I saw you jotting down notes over there.
Oh, yeah, I was making notes.
To edit some things I say out?
No, I was writing down Safer Missouri Plan.
Yeah, you should read it. It's actually really good.
Yeah, I will. No, I think it was a great discussion. I think you have a really refreshing approach to law enforcement and to leadership. I know that just as an outside civilian, I worked in healthcare that was my career before this world. And
whatever this world is now,
podcast editor. And it is nice to see that type of, like, I know what I don't know type leadership. It's just too big. There's too much complexities. There's too much going on for one person to know everything. And so you're only as strong as the people you surround yourself with. And I think that's super awesome that that's your approach, because I think that just empowers everybody in the agency to really lean into their jobs and, like, okay, I'm that guy. Like, he's going to ask me about my input on whatever this is. I need to be top of my game. I need to be up on my my education. I need to be, you know, be ready for those questions if he comes to ask them. Because, again, you have those individuals that ask the questions but maybe don't listen to the answer. But I think that you do, and I think that you take all that feedback in and kind of process it and go with that. And I think that's great. I'm thankful for you. And I know that just being around this one, since you've taken that role, has been much more pleasant, because it's hard after, you know, a certain time period to feel excited about your job. And I think it's good whenever you can do that for people. So,
well, if he ever gets too big for his shoes, just put him in that ice bath.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
I will.
Yeah, I didn't tell that story about, would you do 30 minutes of it? What did you do?
Whatever you did, I doubled it.
Well, that's honestly Smee's fault, because I go to get in the ice bath, and I'm on the phone with her, and I said, I don't know how long you sit in these ice baths. And she's like, 15 minutes. Is that what you said?
I said a 10.
She said 15. So I get in it for 15, and I am borderline hypothermic by the time I get out. So but the best part about it is, like, a week later, someone's like, hey, Turner was in it for 30 minutes. And I was like, what? No way. They're like, yeah, he heard that you did it for 15, so he was going to double it. So then I had to do 32 minutes. So I did beat you by 2 minutes. So the ice baths are down there if you want to go down there and go 33.
I hear there's a sign now.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you both are going to go into organ failure pretty quickly.
Yeah, there is a sign. I don't know who's responsible for it, but maybe two people sitting in this room. But, no, I appreciate you taking the time. Again, I know you're really busy, and I think it's going to it means a lot to me, if it doesn't mean to anybody else, but I know that it will. And again, thanks for doing this and sitting down and talking and getting the word out and speaking to the folks. It means a lot.
It's my honor. And to those listening out there, you know, the best ideas don't always come from those that are in a decision or in a position to make change. Best ideas come from the people that are out there doing the job every day, and I want to hear them. So my door is always open, and just very thankful for all of you. So.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Colonel, for being here. I know, like I said, you got stuff to do, but, I mean, heck, I guess I'll see you at work. I've never really interviewed my boss before, so, yeah, see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
I never said that to a guest, but, yeah, I'll see you tomorrow at some point. So, yeah, I appreciate it, sir, and anything comes up, you know, we're happy to help any way we can, but thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, peace.